kind of eating that sticks to your soul. You know who you are and where you're from.
This is Shelley Tomlinson, Belle of All Things Southern, and you're listening to the All Things Southern podcast, brought to you by Jim Taylor Chevrolet in Rayville, Louisiana.
Mama feels about things, Papa's saying grace, Louisiana living sweet as sugar on the name.
Welcome back. We need to talk. All kinds of straight-running crazy news has been breaking out since we got together. First, this. A news report came out saying that science has now proven that people are dumber the hotter it gets. You saw that, right? Well, I'm feeling vindicated. Again. And maybe slightly annoyed. I mean, I've been saying this for ages, but did anyone listen to the Belle of All Things Southern? No. No one believed me. Until the science came out. I've always said hot weather makes you crazy. Longtime listeners might recall some of the illustrative stories I have given you over the years, like the time my middle sister Rhonda attacked me with a pair of scissors while we were cutting our blue jeans into short shorts. I still have a scar on my arm to prove that one. What? Nothing. I was entirely innocent. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But about that hot weather and violence and stupidity, please tell me you heard about the rattlesnake revenge story that hit the news. Oh, allow me. Two men who live in RVs next to each other in rural Texas have been involved in a heated argument that went wild, as in wildlife wild. One of them found a rattlesnake. This is not hard to do in Texas. But he removed its rattler with his own teeth. This is somewhat more difficult. Also, its signature warning sound could not be heard. Your happy hostess can only assume he did not have a knife. Where is Crocodile Dundee when you need him? But back to my story. The assailant turned the thing loose inside his unsuspecting neighbor's home. And it went down like this. After a heated argument, the victim spotted the assailant leaving his home and asked him what he had been doing inside his trailer without permission. The assailant said, "You'll find out." So the victim was pretty cautious while he was checking out his home, and that's how he spotted the 3-foot-long rattlesnake curled up, in his words, on the driver's side of his home. Now, granted, I'm an easy laugh, but that did it for me. Not all homes have a driver's side. The authorities said that fortunately no one was bitten, to which the snake is reported to have said, "Excuse me?" Word has it that Mr. Monroe is feeling quite cautious moving around his house these days. That would be the victim. I don't know, perhaps he feels, wait for it, snake bit? Yeah, I know, that was weak. And this is going to be even weaker. But I don't even think Mr. Rogers would be cozying up to this fella again. I mean, I can hear him now. He's probably singing, "Please don't be my neighbor." Yeah. Okay, no more singing. But I do have more straight-running crazy news. Is anyone else thinking that our smart technology could be our downfall? I saw where there's now a $200 smart pillow up for sale. It is supposed to track your sleep patterns and help you get a peaceful night of rest. Apparently, your smarty pants pillow will plan your night according to the information you give it on what kind of day you had. This gives pillow talk a whole other meaning. It is said that the pillow also vibrates slightly when you begin to snore and can be hooked up with your favorite music. I'm torn. I mean, I can see the advantage of it giving my beloved farmer, that would be Mr. Snoring Machine, a good shake from time to time, and I'm all up for some good soothing worship music. Still, I'm not all in on this. I mean, when you can get the pillow to go get me some dark chocolate after I pour my heart out, give back to me. Right now, I'm thinking that if it is wired, it can be hacked. And I don't want any stranger giving my pillow instructions in the middle of the night. Are you picking up what I'm laying down? Bailing what I'm haying? I thought you might see it my way. And now that we're on the same page, meet me in the All Things Southern kitchen. I want to show you how to make the Bell's baked cheese grits.
Pull up a chair. It all tastes better with stories to share. The home and home cook is what you need. A big old help in a family.
I hosted a big baby shower this past weekend. Can you say 65 plus partygoers? It was to celebrate the upcoming arrival of one Elijah Gabriel Bailey. The expectant mommy is my BFF's daughter, but she might as well be one of my own. It was a pleasure to share in their joy, and there are party pics for you on the blog. Many thanks to the fellow hostesses who helped me lay out a befitting food spread, but I did my garlic cheese grits, and I'm just saying, have mercy. Cheese grits aren't rocket science, but I'll be happy to show you how I whip up mine. You'll need 8 cups of water, 2 cups of quick cooking grits, 2 eggs, 2 cups of extra sharp cheddar cheese, 1/2 pound of Velveeta, 1 stick of butter, 1 teaspoon of garlic, 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, and some salt and black pepper. We'll have these on the website, so if you didn't get all that down, don't keep hitting pause. Just go to allthingssouthern.com. Now, once you have your ingredients together, you'll take a big glass mixing bowl and combine those 2 cups of quick cooking grits with 8 cups of water. Please, for the love, don't use instant grits. That's all I'm going to say, and then I'm going to leave it right there before I get myself all worked up. No instant grits. Okay. Now that you've added your quick cooking grits with 8 cups of water, you're going to cook this in your microwave on high about 8 minutes. Then you'll just stir in the butter, the Velveeta, and the grated sharp cheddar cheese. We'll also add in 2 eggs, but we'll want to temper them first by cracking them in a separate small bowl and gradually stirring in a little of the hot grits. Those eggs will cook if you just toss them right in the big pot, and you don't want that. Scrambled eggs alongside your grits, that's good. In your grits, not so good, and your mama's going to frown at you if she sees it. Once your eggs are tempered, you'll want to add them to the rest of the grits. Then we'll season them with 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, and salt and pepper to taste, and finish it off with the remaining cup of grated sharp cheddar across the top. If these grits are going to be for us, I'm just telling you, I'm going to add in diced jalapenos. But if I'm serving them to a crowd, like the baby shower, I'm going to leave those jalapenos out. Slide in a 375 degree oven and cook for about 30 minutes until they're hot through and through and beginning to firm up and the cheese on top has melted. Have mercy, I'm making myself hungry for cheese grits all over again. Try them and get back to me. That's the Bell's Baked Cheese Grits from the All Things Southern Kitchen. To yours. I'm excited to welcome today's guest to the program. Her name is Dani Petrie, and she is a New York Times bestselling author. Dee Henderson has said she's a name to look for in romantic suspense. And after reading this first novel, and this is my first foray into Dani's work, I can tell you that it is a name I will be looking for again as well. So thank you for being by All Things Southern Live, Dani.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited, and it's wonderful to hear you enjoyed my story.
Oh, I really did. I started reading it, and it was that thing where I'm like, okay, I was going to scan, but now I can't scan. I've got absolute stop and devote my attention to these characters. And that is like the best and highest praise I can tell you. You know, because you try to prepare for an interview, and sometimes you think you can scan a book. Well, there are some you cannot scan, and Dead Drift was one of them. So let's into the middle. You're welcome. Let's jump into the middle of this book. It's the final book in the Chesapeake Valor series. So maybe you could begin by telling us about the series itself and get us started with that and lead into Dead Drift.
Absolutely. So the series, the Chesapeake Valor series, takes place in the Chesapeake Bay area along Maryland and Virginia. And I actually live in Maryland along the Chesapeake Bay, and I was raised in Virginia along the Chesapeake Bay. So it's an area I'm very familiar with, which I really enjoyed writing. The series, my earlier series, my Alaskan Courage series, focused on five siblings, whereas the Chesapeake Valor series focuses on four friends, four guys who met during their first Little League team when they were kids and remained friends through college when they had to deal with a couple tragedies and it broke them apart. And the first book in the series, Cold Shot, there's a case, they're all in law enforcement, there's a case that brings them back together. All except one friend who had disappeared right after college graduation. And his name is Luke, and it's Luke whose story is in Deadrift. So it's really the conclusion of what happened to Luke and his story with Kate Maxwell and the four friends really diving into their relationships, diving into the setting, and diving into the action of the threat against our country that Luke has to combat in Deadrift. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know what you just told me from that. I've got some reading to do. I've got to back up because I really did enjoy these characters. And once you elaborated on what happened earlier, I've got to go back and get caught up on Luke's story before we find him here in Deadrift. No blowing smoke here on this side of the podcast at all, but you are an excellent suspense writer. Now, where did that come from? Did you always want to write suspense?
Well, I have always loved mystery. As a kid, I remember reading Murder on the Orient Express when I was about 8, and I fell in love with mysteries. And I read Nancy Drew a lot, and my favorite TV show was Scooby-Doo. So I would come home every day after school, and I would sit down and watch it. It was on at 4:30, and then I'd go play with my friends. So I've had this love of mystery for a long time, and I had a love of daydreaming and kind of writing stories. And then I got married, and I had kids, and I decided to stay home with my kids and homeschool them and kind of just set that idea aside. And then I had an illness after the birth of my youngest daughter, and it knocked me out for a while. And so while I was recuperating, I started reading. And one of the books that was given to me was a Dee Henderson novel from her O'Malley series. And it was my first Christian fiction book I had read. And I was fascinated that it had romance and suspense, but also faith. And so I just really read that, and something just, I feel like God just told me, this is what I want you doing. And I started out very slow, but yes, I think I automatically gravitated towards suspense just because of my love of mystery and those type of movies and those type of books.
Now that is so interesting. I'm just kind of taken right now by some of the parallels that you were mentioning just then. I was an avid reader as a young girl and was that kid that climbed up in a tree with a notepad and, yeah, was planning to write great American works, you know, that would, and right. I had a book I remember writing, it was about Martha and her horse. And I think I was 8. It had chapter titles that were just intriguing, like Trouble in the Pasture. I mean, I know it's a shame that the world has not been, you know, blessed with that particular book. But anyway, my story follows yours a lot because I did the same thing as far as marrying and having children. And then there was this one summer that I was reading voraciously. And I hit that point, you know, it's almost like a quota where you get all these words in. And then that call that the Lord had on my life to begin writing kind of came out of so much reading that summer. So I was a little bit intrigued by that. Now, it must have been quite a blessing for you to get that wonderful quote from Dee Henderson. If she was the writer that you were reading, the author that you were reading at the time, that really kind of hooked you into writing suspense.
Yes, Dee, actually, I was blessed enough. I started writing and I finished a manuscript. And I actually was blessed enough to have Dee mentor me in my writing. She worked with me on three novels, and the third of which was my very first debut novel. So I'm super blessed to call her a friend, to still call her a mentor. You know, when I kind of hit a wall with something, I'll usually run ideas by her, and she'll kind of, we'll talk things through. And so, yes, it was absolutely amazing to have somebody I admired so much and somebody that really spoke to me as an author and as a Christian to really take me under her wing and mentor me. And now we've been friends for many, many years.
That is fascinating. I'm excited by that and pleased. I love to see the hand of the Lord just threaded. My friend and I call him the great orchestrator. And I saw his hand in that orchestrating your career. And that's a blessing. But career-wise, you've just had something really exciting happen. I understand from our mutual publicist that you just got back from New York City and the Thriller Fest conference. Now,
yes.
I have not been, and I'm just going to go ahead and hazard a guess that many of my listeners have not been to Thriller Fest, so talk to us about it.
Sure. Thriller Fest is wonderful. It's put on by the International Thriller Writers, which is a great organization for anybody who likes to read or write suspense, and all variations within there: mystery, romantic suspense, Christian, ABA. And so they host it in New York every year, and I've been one other time. This year was really wonderful. So it's kind of a combination. They do what they call Craft Fest, where you go, and a lot of authors teach lessons for writers. And so I went ahead and went a day early and participated in Craft Fest. And then Thriller Fest itself is for a combination of writers and readers. And they have lots of different authors sit on panels and talk on different subjects. So, for example, I was on a panel that talked about developing character connections in your books, which was really, really fun. But I was also pretty much a fangirl because I got to meet Lee Child, who I've been a huge fan of for years and years, and got a picture with him and a book autographed, and I was so excited. So it's really a fun conference because there's a lot of learning, there's a lot of camaraderie, there's a lot of connection with readers, and it's just a great way to learn about the genre of mystery, suspense, and thrillers.
I've got to toss out a name to you that just came to me when you were telling me about the interaction with the readers there. I have been part of a lot of author festivals, and my absolute favorite, have you ever heard of the Pulpwood Queen?
No.
Okay. I'm going to have to send you some information, Danny. If you like interacting with your readers, you will love seeing what the Pulpwood Queen is doing. And that is, if my Southern accent's kind of tricky there, that's P-U-L-P, wood, because that was the industry that was in the area when she created this thing. But in short, it is a super large book club. I think she has 300 chapters, but when she has this annual girlfriend weekend, I like to participate because there's sometimes at these festivals, the authors are kind of separated from the readers. You don't have a lot of interaction, but yes, at Pulpwood Queen's girlfriend weekend, it's just very much all those walls are down and the readers and the authors get to visit in between the panels. And there's just a lot of really strong connections that are made there between authors and readers. So remind me, I want to send you that. Well, I think Kathy Patrick Murphy would love to read your work. So I'm going to put in a little word for you there. Not that you need one. I think you're doing absolutely great on your own with your book. They are just bestsellers, all of them. And it looks like Dead Drift is going to follow right along with the pack. So if I were to take that hard task of asking you to look at your work and try to figure out why it resonates with your readers so much, how would Danny answer that question?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I think based on reader feedback that I've gotten from my readers, what they seem to love most are the characters. They seem to feel that I write really relatable and real characters, and they really grow close to them. And with Dead Drift being the last book in the series, I'm getting emails now pouring in saying, I love the book, but I'm so sad the series is over. Would you consider writing another one that maybe of them down the road, or maybe of this couple married, or maybe of this? And so it's really fun to see readers get as attached to the characters as I am.
Oh, no doubt. That's what you want to hear when they say, I cannot let go of Kate. You know, I need to know about Kate and Luke and what's happening next. And that's, I'm sure, a blessing for you to hear. So talk to us a little bit more then about those characters. How do they come to you? Do you base them on people you know? Or are they a compilation of people you know? Or are you just creating them totally in your little head?
Sure. So every book for me has been different. My Alaskan Courage series, which is my original one, was a little bit more loosely based on people I knew. In each book, at least one of the characters, there were five siblings and then their five love interests. And so either the sibling or the love interest was based loosely off someone I know. The two sisters were based off of my two daughters, pretty loosely. And one of the brothers was based off my husband. And then the rest of the characters were really just characters that I pictured with those people. And I don't really plot. So I just kind of sit down and have a very vague idea and let my characters kind of grow as I'm writing the book. With the Chesapeake Valor series, it was a little different. No one was based off of anyone I knew. I just had a really strong feeling for these four guys and wanted to kind of play with through the early drafts of the connection between them and the dynamics between them. Because, as you know, I think guys and their friendships are very different than women and, you know, fellow girlfriends. And so it was really interesting writing it. And fortunately, my husband will read all my books before I send them in. And he was always saying to me, a guy wouldn't say this. A guy wouldn't do this. So it was a lot of fun, though.
That's good feedback. You can trust that. And I'm
right.
Yeah, that's really neat. So these people, so this is pretty much just coming out of your head. And I want to speak a minute to what you talked about. You said you weren't a plotter. And so for our listening audience, to just kind of describe that some writers plot and some of them fly by the seat of their pants and just explore the world as it's developing. So you're saying that you do not plot. These stories are just... you're just kind of witnessing them?
Correct. Yes. I usually have a general idea of kind of what if, you know, there was a terrorist attack on the United States. And I won't give spoilers for any of the books, but let's say I would say, what if there was a terrorist attack on the United States? Who would I want combating it? And so I'll have a very vague idea of usually the jobs that my characters do, but not much else. And I'll sit down and just start writing, and the characters I find just kind of come to life as I'm writing the early drafts. I actually, interestingly enough, people think I'm a little crazy for this, but I write all my first draft longhand. Wow. And then I type it in. And as I'm typing it in, I kind of start writing and editing it that way. And so it's kind of through that draft that I really get to kind of hone and get to know my characters well. And then I kind of go from there with revisions. But yes, I don't do character sketches. I don't do an outline. It does result in a lot of drafts for me that I think a lot of my friends who write by an outline are able to avoid doing, but it's just the way my brain works, and I think how God wired me.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you recognize, you know, how your brain works. That's so important as a writer to know how it is. And, you know, when you sit down, I'm picturing you writing in longhand there and getting it down. And I mean, that pretty much for me speaks to the very first rule that I have for writing, and that's don't get it right, get it written. I'm sure you've heard the phrase, but I picked it up years ago, and it always speaks to me because you can just get so paralyzed trying to get it absolutely right that you never write R-I-G-H-T, that you never write W-R-I-T-E, a word. So you have found the way that you work best, and apparently your readers agree with you. So, yeah, keep it up.
Yes. And that is an absolute rule. And I do have to remind myself with that, because I'll sometimes get caught up trying to get it right. And, you know, I have to kind of remind myself, you know, it just needs to be progress, not perfection. You know, that's what for later drafts are for. And the more I can get that in my head, then the more the story kind of comes alive and I'm able to just kind of let God lets the words flow. So,
you know, as you were saying, then I was thinking, Danny, that's very much like our spiritual lives. I can draw an analogy there because we can get so wigged out trying to get it right with the Lord, trying to do right, trying to, you know, do everything perfectly that we miss out on the sweet relationship with Him. And at least that's been my experience in the past. And He has taught me how to break out of all that performance driven relationship and just enjoy Him. This morning I was sitting on the dock. I live on the banks of Lake Providence here in Northeast Louisiana. I was sitting on the dock praying and just thanking Him that He has taught me to quit trying and to just enjoy what it is that He has done. So I had to.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I think that's so true.
Yeah, we do. We do that. We get all wigged out trying to do what He's already done. But that's another podcast. Let's stay on task here, Shelley, with the book at hand. I know that you've had, because you're human, I know you've had some challenges in your life. And, you know, everyone does. So what happens in Danny's life? How do you keep writing? What motivates you when it's not easy?
Well, that's a great question. I actually struggle with a number of health issues. I've been diagnosed with, I think it's 4 autoimmune diseases now. And so it's been quite a struggle over the last, probably since I've been published, actually. Within about a year of getting published, it was kind of one year after another. And so, and for a while I lived with chronic pain, and thankfully the doctors, having finally figured out the primary disease that I have is lupus. And, having that as a primary disease and them knowing it, they've been able to treat it better. So I do better. But yeah, there's always things that you have to learn to push through. And there's been a lot of other things. I lost my mom. I lost my grandmother. Both went to heaven, shortly after my first book was debuting. And I think that I've learned, for me, God has given me writing as almost to some extent a spiritual practice. It's time with Him. And it's what I feel like He's created me to do. So when I'm doing that, I feel like I'm doing something that is connected to Him, and it's really kind of my quiet time. Part of my quiet time, I start with my Bible study and I do prayer and I listen to worship music, and then I just go right into writing. And it's something that's really a blessing to me rather than a chore in any way. And I just feel like that just is what motivates me, that keeps me writing, and also writing for readers. I'm praying God will use the work to reach people who are maybe hurting, who are struggling themselves, who, you know, are wanting a deeper walk with God, or maybe who don't know God. And I just am very humbled when I receive emails from people saying that, you know, my book encouraged them or that they were struggling. And I just think it's very humbling and amazing how God can take stories that He's kind of worked in my heart and then take them and work in others' lives. And so that's why I write, because I feel like it's part of me, and I don't think I know how to function without writing, but also how He's using it. And it's just been such a overwhelmingly humbling blessing.
That was beautiful. I love that. You know, writing out of that relationship that we have with the Lord, it's as if we're partnering with that creative force that our Father is. And hearing you describe being in communication, being in fellowship with Him, you know, reading and studying and then going into writing, I just loved that, because I just saw that beautiful blur. There was no stop and start. And I talk so much to my audiences when I speak and travel about not trying to put this sweet Jesus in our boxes, our secular and sacred boxes. You know, this is my quiet time, and now this is the rest of my day, you know, but understanding that, no, He really is everything, and that we just want to live before Him. I saw you doing that as you were describing your writing process and how there's no line of demarcation there, and you just, you know, move into letting Him help you, teach you how to write stories that resound with the people that are reading them. That was beautiful. I enjoyed
Oh, thank
that
you.
a whole lot. How does that apply to Dead Drift? Did you have something in mind that maybe the Lord was speaking to you or working with you on the time that you wrote this particular novel that you want readers to take away?
Yes, I think with Dead Drift and with every book, it's different. As I don't plot, I also don't set out with a spiritual theme in mind. I don't want anything to feel forced or like I'm trying to make something come across. And so as I write the stories, I just kind of let God lead the stories. But afterwards, when I have a solid draft to look at, I can look at it and go, oh, this book's about hope or this book's about restoration. And so with Dead Drift, really the theme of it ended up being restoration. And Luke, when you start the book, Luke is really struggling. He's struggling with choices he's made, especially choices that affected other people, that have has affected his walk with the Lord. And he's really kind of in a compromised spot where he knows he needs to make some decisions because he's either going to fall further away from the Lord or he's going to have to change something and draw closer to the Lord. And so I feel like God really spoke to me about, as I was writing this through different devotionals or sermons I heard, about, you know, that contrast between light and dark and the contrast between loving wholeheartedly and being lukewarm. And I just felt like that was just his way of bringing that up over and over. And I think that weaved through Luke's story.
That is great. That okay. Now, if that didn't make everyone listening to this want to run out and get a copy of Dead Drift, then I'm just going to have to ask them to listen to it again, because that was a great, great encouragement and inspiration to read your works. I'm going to be a fangirl from this point forward. I will just go ahead and tell you that. So tell me what I might expect to come from Danny's pen in the future. What you got? What are you working on?
Okay, so I've got two things. One, the project's done, but it will be out in September. I am doing a novella collection with Dee Henderson and Lynette Eason. Dee mentored, as I mentioned, me, but she also mentored Lynette Eason. And we had done a novella collection a few years back, but we have another one coming out very beginning of September called The Cost of Betrayal. And there's three novellas, one by each of us, and the theme of betrayal and the different forms it can take weaves through the collection. So that will be out in September. And it's so much fun to be able to actually write in a collection with my mentor. It's amazing. And Lynette and I are friends as well. So that's fun. And then I'm working on a brand new series that will release next year called Coastal Guardians, which is about the coastal Coast Guard Investigative Service. And so I'm really enjoying exploring the dynamics and relationship between co-workers and the men and women that serve in those roles.
Okay, cool. So where can we keep up with you? Give everyone a few ideas of, are you on social media and is it by your name? Do you have a pen name? How are we going to keep up with Danny once the podcast is over?
Absolutely. So yes, I write by my name, Danny Petrie. My website is just my name. It's www.DannyPetrie.com. I'm also on Facebook. Just search Danny Petrie. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. And I primarily spend my time on Facebook and Instagram. I'm there pretty much daily and I love interacting with readers. They can sign up for my newsletter on my website. They can contact me directly through email. Well, no, and I just really enjoy getting to know readers.
Right. There's a host of opportunities right there for y'all to connect with Danny. And Danny, I am going to connect with you on those as well so that my readers can find you through those links. When I put up the podcast, I'll put it up on my author wall and my personal wall as well so everyone can follow you home. It has been just a perfect delight to visit with you today. And I just speak blessings on your work. Thank you a lot for being by All Things Southern Love.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy.
We're going to close today's show with a few devotional thoughts for us parents and grandparents. Y'all, we love our littles. That's not up for debate. And the time we invest in them is to be commended. But let's not fall short of our greatest responsibility. We can give our kids everything and leave them destitute. We can give them the best education and leave them unlearned. We can equip them for their future and leave them unprepared for eternity. This is what God instructed the children of Israel to do with the good news of who He is and what He had done for them. It's found in Joel 1:3, and it says, "Tell your children of it, and let your children tell their children, and their children another generation." This is our responsibility, parents and grandparents. Taking our littles to church is to be encouraged. Having them in youth groups and Christian camps is to be encouraged. But we can't cede our responsibility to teach them about Jesus to anyone else. It's too costly. They need to hear about Jesus from us, and not what He did in our lives back in the day, but what He is doing in them right now. They need to walk with us as we walk with God. Amen. Amen. Thanks for being with me. It's been a pleasure, and I sure do hope to see you next time right here on All Things Southern Life, if the good Lord's willing and the creek doesn't rise. This is Shelley with Hugs for All.